Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. On today's program, I'd like to discuss the underlying ideological issue behind those who want to continue the COVID-19 lockdowns and those who want to open up the country. At first, we might assume that this conflict is simply over people's different perceptions about safety, about different medical fears, about different understandings concerning biology, and all those things factor in. But notice the divide follows people's political ideology. Conservative Republicans are pushing to open up the country, while Democrats are working to keep it locked down. Why is that? Well, is it because Democrats are more concerned about health and Republicans are more concerned about money? Or is it because Democrats believe government must make health decisions while Republicans believe in individual freedom? This lockdown controversy is about deeper philosophical moral arguments. It is more ideological than it is medical. It's not just about the scientific data, as some governors claim. It's about what people believe concerning the role of government, concerning what authority government has, the role of the individual, personal versus social responsibility. And it is those deeper issues that this program, God and Country, always tries to address, because that's where the Bible takes us. To the deeper moral spiritual issues. Throughout the Bible, God does not give us specific instructions for every situation, such as thou shall or shalt not lock down the country when there's a pandemic. Instead, God gives us general moral principles by which we're to make those decisions, and God tests our values in that way. Because it all comes down to one's worldview, what you believe about God, man, sin, and redemption. There is a moral reason why it is generally true that the political left wants to continue the lockdowns and those on the political right want to open up, because there is a different worldview. And in this issue, it all comes down to what is called governmental paternalism. And that's the word for today. Are you for it? Are you against it? And why? And you notice the word paternalism has within it the word parent. And the issue is whether or not the government should be your parent. Or rather, how much should the government do for us versus how much you should do for yourself? And here's another issue. If the government does more for you than it should, is the government just making a procedural mistake, or is it immoral for the government to do more for you than it should? Is the government, in its paternalism, violating the law of God? Does paternalism threaten and undermine righteousness in the land? Is paternalism the policy of the wicked or the policy of the righteous? And where do we draw the line concerning what the government should or should not do for us? The government does do some things for us. Romans 13, it is called of God to protect, to be an avenger against evildoers. But does that mean in everything? Should the government tell you where to work or how much you should get paid in order to stop any potential evil? All activities in some way can be connected to stopping evil. For example, someone might claim that the government needs to take over the healthcare industry to protect us from possibly being overcharged. Or the government should take over all universities to ensure that people will not be cheated out of a good education. All socialists make their argument on the basis that we ought to have socialism to prevent evil. But is that what Romans 13 is really speaking about? Or is Romans 13 simply referring to legal penalties for crimes, that the government is to set the law and to be a referee? So these are big questions that divide society. This is why America is polarized between Democrats and Republicans, between socialists and free enterprise capitalists. So, this week's program is about government paternalism. Now, this term is a pejorative, just like the label the nanny state. Those who believe in statism, big government, would probably not call it paternalism. They would simply say the government or the state is doing what the state ought to do. Or actually, they might say, yes, they actually believe that the government should be the parent or the nanny in some situations. And their argument is, if the government has fire departments and police departments and sanitation departments and a dog catcher and they make the roads, then there is no reason why the state should not also run daycares and schools and healthcare and retirement and jobs and businesses and housing. And to also dictate the level of risk people should take during a pandemic. And here is the problem with paternalism, socialism, and statism. Without the moral law of God, there is no limiting principle on how far the state should go, except whatever appears to be expedient at any given time. Statism, socialism, paternalism as a philosophy is a blank check for government control. As the Italian communist Mussolini said, everything within the state, nothing against the state, nothing outside the state. This is where the philosophy of paternalism can lead. Now, a Christian conservative would say, no, the government, yes, does have a role in protecting and providing for the people, but there are limiting principles. There is a divine law limiting the role of government, and those parameters come from the roles that the scripture allots to the institution of government. There are various institutions. There's the institution of the state, the institution of the church, the institution of the family and the individual. All those are established by God, and those roles are distinct. The state should not replace the family, as in the Communist Manifesto. But first, let's begin by defining this ideology of paternalism. You'll hear this term, and you ought to use this term in discussing these COVID lockdowns. Rather than just complaining about the news, ask your friends or the people you're trying to win, what are their opinions concerning government paternalism? What should or should not the government do for us? What are the limits? And how are we to determine those limits? Remember, the ultimate goal is not to preach the gospel of politics, but to move the conversation over to truth, to scripture, to Christ, his authority, his kingdom, and his salvation. So let me begin with a philosophical definition of paternalism. A quote here from the Encyclopedia of Philosophy. Paternalism is the interference of the state with a person against his will and defended or motivated by a claim that the person interfered with will be better off or protected from harm. And this debate over paternalism involves issues such as anti-drug legislation, seatbelts, speed limits, and now pandemic executive orders. And in regard to COVID-19, we have many examples of paternalism in practice. Let's take, for example, the executive orders of Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, you know, like Cuomo and Murphy and Newsom. She's an example of lockdown mania, extreme government paternalism. Governor Whitmer ruled that all individuals currently living in the state of Michigan are ordered to stay at home or at their place of residence. You can't leave your property. Whitmer said, if you're not buying food or medicine or other essential items, you should not be going to the store. She decreed that all public and private gatherings of any number of people occurring among persons not part of a single household are prohibited. She actually had to qualify that you're allowed to be with your family. She ordered that no persons or entity shall operate a business or conduct operations that require workers to leave their homes or places of residence. Then, of course, there are pages defining what are and what are not essential businesses. Because once you claim that essential businesses can open and non-essential businesses must stay closed, you must have pages to explain that criteria. And that criteria is often very subjective. Also, it was not permitted to travel to in-state vacation homes or to your second home. Large stores can admit only 4 customers for every 1,000 square feet of customer floor space. And hardware stores and home repair stores must close all areas dedicated to carpet, flooring, furniture, garden centers, plant nurseries, or paint. You can't buy those things. Why? Well, maybe if those things are sold, more people will enter the store. But there are already capacity limits. You're also prohibited from using a motorboat or a jet ski because in some way that would spread the virus. So it's no wonder that in Michigan, they have had some of the biggest political protests. One attorney in Michigan described it as taking a sledgehammer to an ant. Of course, Governor Whitmer complained that these protests against her were out of racism, out of being anti-woman, which is often what the left does when it doesn't have an answer. It just cries racism or misogyny. So as the pressure mounted last week, Whitmer started to walk back some of these restrictions, but even her walkbacks are ridiculous. There are pages of rulings allowing for landscaping and lawn service companies, garden nurseries, bike repair shops, but you can play golf, but you're not allowed to have a golf cart. You can now travel between your two homes, but only if it's an emergency. So we ask, what is wrong with this woman? Is she a germaphobe? Does she have control issues? Is it a matter of irrational fears? Maybe she doesn't understand how biology works. Why is she so much into government paternalism? What is driving this worldview? Is this stupidity? Is this personality type? Or is this moral evil? Now, apparently her husband is much more passive. The news media revealed that over the Memorial Day weekend, Whitmer's husband, Mark Mallory, called to have his boat put in the water at their vacation home in northern Michigan. But this was right after Whitmer told the state in a news conference, if you don't live in northern Michigan, stay away from those regions. So Whitmer got caught. And she later tried to explain it away to the news media by saying that her husband was just making a bad joke. So her husband doesn't even follow her rules. You can imagine the fight that took place between her and her husband when that news broke. He probably said, come on, Gretchen, I can take my boat out on the lake and I'm not going to catch the virus. I'm not going to spread it to my neighbors. But no, she wagged her finger at her husband and said, no, Mark, no, you can't take the risk. Nobody can take the risk. But the irony here is that her husband is actually a doctor. And even he has no problem going boating with the COVID-19 virus being out there. So what's wrong with Governor Whitmer? Maybe this paternal thing is a gender thing. You know, it's true that compared to men, women are more risk adverse. Women value security more than men. Men tend to value freedom more than security. Women also tend to favor Democrat socialism. Here's an interesting statistic that most people are unaware of. If it weren't for the women vote, not a single Democrat would have won the presidency of the United States. There is a 4 to 11% difference in women voting in favor of the Democrats. And that margin is enough to win elections for many Democrats. So why do women vote Democrat more often? Now, some explain it as women, especially single women, looking to government for their security. They want the government to protect them more. They feel more vulnerable than men. They want the government to be their safety net. Hence, socialism fits their personal needs. Governor Whitmer's own parents divorced when she was 10 years old. Maybe she doesn't trust men or the family for her security, so she looks to government. You know, like in the Obama administration, they had a commercial for Obamacare called The Life of Julia. And this single woman is taken care of by the government from the cradle to the grave. She's basically married to the government. So paternalism in politics could be a gender thing, but it also could be a personality thing. Some people by nature are more paternal, more nurturing, more social. Did you ever meet an elementary school teacher? They're nurturers. And sometimes they even talk to adults like they talk to their students. They expect everyone to be in a straight line. They expect everyone to sit up straight in their chairs. They have procedures for how to hand out milk and cookies. And I'm glad for elementary school teachers because I don't have the patience for it. I would let chaos reign in the first grade if I was a teacher. I'm just not much for rules. So maybe favoring government paternalism is a personality thing. We all have different gifts. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Now, back to the articles about paternalism. Philosophers speculate all sorts of reasons why people lean toward paternalism. They mostly look at it as an information thing where paternalists argue that the government must do many things for the people because the people don't have the information. They don't understand the risks and the rewards. And political philosophers speak of soft paternalism, where the state passes rules only because the people do not know the danger. But then there is hard paternalism, where the state passes rules even though the people know the danger and even though the people are willing to take the risk. For hard paternalists, even if the public has the information, they believe that the experts and the all-wise people running government have better information. They see the whole picture, and hence they ought to be the ones making the decision rather than the people. Then there is moral versus welfare paternalism. Welfare paternalism is the belief that the state should simply protect people's physical well-being. Moral paternalism is the belief that the state should direct the morals of the people, outlawing prostitution or gambling, or even requiring the teaching of LGBTQ. Then there is the issue of the purpose of paternalism. Is interference in people's freedom, paternalism, for the purpose of the good of the state or for the purpose of the good of the individual? What's the goal? The success of the individual or the success of the government? Now, as far as arguments against governmental paternalism, without going to God and the Bible, the main argument is that paternalism is wrong because autonomy is a significant part of a person's good. But says who? What if someone comes along and says, I believe my good is to not be autonomous. I want the government to be my parent. I feel better having the government make decisions for me. Who is to say that the individual's right to autonomy is a legitimate human right because it's a greater good? And who defines a greater good? Here's the point. Without God in the Bible, the whole idea of intrinsic human rights, the right to self-rule, cannot be proved. Without God, without being made in the image of God, without a divine lawgiver, maybe we are like bees or ants in a colony, where the good of the colony must come before the good of the individual, and then you get communism and tyranny. People then become tools of the state, worker bees, drones. But for the secular mindset, for the materialist, what's wrong with that? Why should there be individual freedom? Without God, who's to say that in Star Wars, the Empire of Darth Vader is wrong and the rebels of the Republic are right? in Hindu philosophy. The philosophy of George Lucas, the Force. Right and wrong are just two sides of the same coin. Darkness and light simply have to be in balance. We have to have the dark force at some time, and then for some time we have to have the light force. Moral evil doesn't really exist. They're only forces in balance, like cold and hot or wet and dry. So without the moral law of God, without God, anti-paternalism can only come up with some subjective pragmatic arguments to refute paternalism, such as the problem with governmental paternalism is that the governments are often influenced by special interest groups. Rather than the good of the general public, the government is often influenced by political parties or by certain businesses. And the other big pragmatic argument used against paternalism is that the individual has better knowledge, better firsthand knowledge of how to direct his own life. Better knowledge than those government experts who are far removed from the situation. So the pragmatic argument is that it's a knowledge issue. That's why for the conservative right, the Cuomo and Murphy policy of sending COVID patients back into nursing homes is such a big deal. Because the foundational argument for government paternalism is that the government experts know better than the individuals. The nursing home failure undermines the whole philosophy of paternalism and hence these government lockdowns. And so that's why conservatives are harping on the failures of these COVID lockdowns and executive orders. If it can be proved that the government makes a mess of things and that individuals make better choices, from a pragmatic point of view, paternalism crumbles. But again, what I want us to see in this is that without the Bible, there is no conclusive way of determining whether governmental paternalism is right or wrong, or even to know where to draw the line. In reading on this subject, I found that philosophers are just grasping for the wind looking for answers. They refuse to acknowledge God and his moral law because they believe that that would be anti-intellectual to look to God's revelation. They believe that all answers must originate from man. Truth must be derived from man. So they are left to judge everything simply according to human needs. Need for safety versus reward, long-term versus short-term gain. And if there are any errors in governmental policy, in governmental systems, it is never considered moral sin. It is simply a lack of knowledge. In secular thought, if people were fully informed concerning the reward and the consequences for every action, we would always choose the right path. So for secular philosophers and ethicists, man's problem is only an information problem. If we get good information, we would create the perfect society. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the Christian-Russian dissident who spent years in the Russian gulag, wrote the following: "The tilt of freedom toward evil stems from a humanistic and benevolent concept according to which man does not bear any evil within himself, and all the defects of life are caused by misguided social systems, which must therefore be corrected." And Solzhenitsyn learned firsthand where the denial of evil leads a society to greater evils. Dennis Prager had a column entitled, "The Worldwide Lockdowns May Be the Greatest Mistake in History." And in this piece, he tried to make a distinction between people passing stupid policy because they're following bad science versus people passing stupid policy because they're morally evil. He writes, "The worldwide lockdown is not only a mistake, but also possibly the worst mistake the world has ever made. Mistake and evil are not synonymous. The lockdown is a mistake. The Holocaust, slavery, communism, fascism, etc. were evils. Massive mistakes are made by arrogant fools. Massive evils are committed by evil people. I get his point. But is not some massive mistakes in paternalism also evil? Committed by people who have an unjust desire for power and control. The Bible explains that all policy mistakes have a spiritual moral dimension. People do stupid things because they harbor sinful attitudes. Yes, there are differing degrees of evil regarding policy. And yes, there are personality differences and gender differences. And there are high-risk A-type personalities and low-risk B-type personalities. But ultimately, policies of governmental paternalism that violate the boundaries of God are spiritual moral failures. They're evils. And there are two classic biblical texts on this issue. The first is the lesson in 1 Samuel chapter 8, where the Bible describes governmental paternalism as a moral evil, something that men do when they forsake God. And the more I come to understand 1 Samuel 8, the more I see the profound political significance in that text. So the elders of Israel, each of the 12 tribes had ruling elders, came to the prophet Samuel and asked Samuel to anoint for them a king. They knew if they were to sell the idea of a king, the king had to have some sort of legitimacy, the approval of the religious community. So Samuel rejects the request of the people and explains to them how a king will not make their lives easier or more secure. He will just be an added layer of bureaucracy to take their money. 1 Samuel chapter 8. He will take a tenth of your seed and of your vineyard and give it to his officers and to his servants. He will also take your male servants and your female servants and the best young men and your donkeys and use them for his work. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his servants. Then you will cry out in that day because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves. But the Lord will not answer you in that day. So Samuel was saying, big government can't do much for you. It's only a freeloader, a taskmaster. You don't need a nanny state. So was this request of the elders a desire for governmental paternalism, asking government to do more for us than God ordained government to do? I believe so. The people wanted the government to do more for them than what God intended. And the elders and the kings were more than happy to take control of that which they had no God-given right to take control of. 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 19, nevertheless, the people refused to listen to the voice of Samuel, and they said, no, but there shall be a king over us, that we might be like all of the nations, that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. So notice that the people wanted the government to fight their battles. And there are people today who want the government to fight their healthcare battles, and their education battles, and their retirement battles, and their employment battles. They want the government to be their parent. They want the government to be their safety net. So what was God's response? Did God come to Samuel and say, well, you know, Samuel, the country of Israel has matured, and now the country needs to enter into the stage of socialism? Or did God come to Samuel and say, you know, the personality of Israel at this time is that these people have become low risk takers. They just value safety over freedom, and that's okay. Or did God come to Samuel and say, you know, this is just a gender thing, or this is just a matter of needs, or this is just a knowledge thing or a different risk assessment? No, God did not give any of those modern psychological explanations for people wanting a paternalistic government. God said to Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 7, listen to the voice of the people in regard to all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them. Like all the deeds which they have done since the day I brought them up from the land of Egypt to this day, in that they have forsaken me and served other gods, so they are doing to you also. So the problem was a spiritual, moral problem. Because the leaders and the people abandoned God, it resulted in a subconscious desire for government paternalism. It wasn't just a personality thing or a circumstantial need thing. It was sin. And notice the text says, they did this like all of the sinful deeds which they have done, specifically idolatry. Government paternalism is one part of the package of sin. Show me a nation of idolaters, and I will show you a nation that wants socialism. Show me a nation of adulterers, and I'll show you a nation that wants statism. In 1 Samuel 12, God gave the people a sign of judgment. Because they wanted a parental state to fight their battles, is not today the wheat harvest? I will call to the Lord, and he may send thunder and rain. Then you will know and see that your wickedness is great, which you have done in the sight of the Lord by asking for yourself a king. Unbiblical paternalism is a moral evil. It is not just a different way of governance. Another key text is in the New Testament. Luke chapter 22, and Jesus said to them, "The kings of the Gentile lord it over them, and those who have authority over them are called benefactors. But it is not this way with you." Here Jesus is contrasting the current ways of human government to the way we're to act as citizens of Christ's kingdom. Now Jesus is not saying that civil governments do not have authority to rule, but he is rebuking totalitarianism in human governments and government largesse and handouts, benefactors. So where do we draw the line between the state's proper parental role and its improper parental role? When do politicians become evil by an unjust control over the people? Well, that takes a lifetime of studying Genesis to Revelation, being saturated in the Word of God, so you intuitively know what belongs to the state, what belongs to the family, what belongs to the individual, what belongs to the church, and what belongs to God. If you're far from God, if you don't know the Word of God, if you operate on a secular evolutionary worldview, you will not get it right. You will be the foolish king who decrees that you can sit on the wet sand, but you cannot sit on the dry sand. You can get a haircut for your dog, but you cannot get a haircut for yourself. You can play golf, but you cannot ride in a golf cart. This just in, a judge in Illinois wrote a scathing ruling against the governor of Illinois for his executive orders. And this is quite unusual because rarely do judges speak so plainly. Quote, "Since the inception of this insanity, the following regulations, rules, or consequences have occurred. I won't get COVID if I get an abortion, but I will get COVID if I get a colonoscopy. Selling pot is essential, but selling goods and services at a family-owned business is not. The pot wasn't even legal, and pot dispensaries didn't even exist in the state until 5 months ago. And in that 5 months, they have become essential, but a family-owned business in existence for five generations is not. A family of six can pile into their car and drive to Carlisle Lake without contracting COVID, but if they get in the same boat, they will. We are told that kids rarely contract the virus and sunlight kills it, but summer youth programs, sports programs are canceled. Four people can drive in a car to the golf course and not get COVID. But if they play in a foursome, they will. Or if I go to Walmart, I won't get COVID, but if I go to church, I will. Murderers are released from custody, while small business owners are threatened with arrest if they have the audacity to attempt to feed their families. The defendant in this case, the governor, orders you to stay at home and pronounces that if you leave the state, you are putting people in danger. But his own family members travel to Florida and Wisconsin because he deems such travel essential for himself. One initial rationale why the rules don't apply to him is that his family had animals that needed to be fed. Well, try selling that argument to farmers who have had to slaughter their herds because of disruption in the supply chain. When laws do not apply to those who make them, people are not being governed. They're being ruled. Make no mistake, these executive orders are not laws. They are royal decrees. Illinois citizens are not being governed, they're being ruled. The last time I checked, Illinois citizens are also Americans, and Americans don't get ruled. So what is wrong with the governor of Illinois? Why doesn't he understand the limits of government? Proverbs 28:5, evil men do not understand justice, but those who seek the Lord understand all things. It is a moral, spiritual problem. If you need some motivation to come to God, His Word, to come to Christ as Lord and Savior, realize this. Without God in your life, you will fall into greater and greater darkness. That's Romans chapter 1. You will become vain in your imaginations, and your foolish heart will be darkened. And Ephesians chapter 4, verse 17, you will become darkened in your understanding. You'll be excluded from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in you, because of the hardness of your heart. Thank you for taking the time to include God and country as part of your discipleship in the Word. Get into the Scriptures. Get into a good Bible teaching church. Learn, fellowship, serve, encourage the saints. And may God bless, and may Jesus Christ reign.